We have lived through extraordinary times. When the first significant lockdown finished in the middle of last year, we began to move into, you know, this new experience of so-called freedom. And I think most of us thought this was just going to be the new reality. Yes, we have to check in and all of those kinds of things, and there'd be restrictions on numbers. But I don't think any of us were quite prepared for the lockdown that we've just endured. You know, for almost 4 months, the things that we took for granted, being able to gather on a Sunday to celebrate the Eucharist, being able to visit friends and family, so many of the ordinary adventures of life have been denied to us for the sake of public safety, for the sake of a community to be able to get through this together. During the first period of lockdown, it was easy to imagine that COVID was something that was still at some distance. But during the last lockdown, things began to get a lot closer. You know, it wasn't just people in Sydney who were getting sick, but people not just in the Illawarra, but people in our parish, people that were very close to us. Indeed, of course, it also claimed the lives of some of our parishioners. So this sense of what we've been through, as we now begin to emerge, as we now begin to walk into a different way of being, has also been darkened in some ways by the counter-narrative, by an alternative viewpoint. Rather than being in this together, and rather than us trying to seek the thing about the love of neighbor and wanting the common good, another narrative began to emerge and became much louder, a narrative not about the common good, but about our own right. And that narrative was much darker. We want to know, of course. We want to understand. We want to be able to make sense of the world. But so often over these months, it's been very difficult to understand. How do we make sense of things? How do we find a way through? Often this has been described as this kind of space or the experience that we've just been through as being in this liminal space, an in-between kind of reality. And in some ways, the town of Jericho is like that liminal space. And the best example of a liminal space is something that still seems a long way away, but an airport terminal. You know, it's a place that you have to endure, you have to go through that experience in order to be able to get to your final destination. And we've been in this period of lockdown, and Jericho stands as this town that is kind of there, but not there. It's there on the edge. Jerusalem was the city. Jerusalem was the place where everything was happening. And Jericho was a necessary step along that journey. It had its own charms. The climate, for a start, is much better down in the Jordan Valley than it is up on the rocky heights of the mountainous range that Jerusalem is built on. So many people chose to live in Jericho rather than up in Jerusalem. And so it had a certain vibrancy of itself. It was on the main road, and so people traveling from north or south invariably would go through Jericho. So we can begin to imagine what it was like on that day when people, there was already a hustle and bustle. It was just before the great feast of the Jewish feast of Passover. It was one of the pilgrimage festivals, and so many people would have been traveling to make their way to Jerusalem. And so there would have already been more crowds, more people there in the town on that day. And so presumably Bartimaeus had high hopes for that day. His mood would have been somewhat elevated because there was a new clientele that he could put his cloak out and people would take pity. Clearly he was someone who was blind, unable to fend for himself, not able to look after himself. And so he was there full of hope, full of expectancy on this day. And he's heard about there's someone special that's coming through town today. There's someone that is drawing an even larger crowd of people as they begin to make their way through the town, to make their way through to the gate where he's positioned himself. He's there with his cloak. As I said, Jericho has a fairly mild climate, so he probably doesn't need the cloak to keep warm, but he needs it as a point of demarcation. That's where the coins will be thrown. That's where people would put their offerings to him. As a beggar, he has nothing else to rely on apart from the generosity, the care, the love of neighbor that others might exhibit. And so he's there with such expectancy on this day. And then he hears the crowd begin to roar, and he knows that now is this chance. He knows that Jesus, the one that he's heard about, he knows that he is the son of David. He knows that he seems to be the long-awaited Messiah of the Jewish people. And so he begins to shout out. This is his chance. He's going to grab it. He's going to run with it with all of his heart, all of his longing. He's going to claim this possibility, this one chance that he has to be made well. Son of David, Jesus, have mercy on me. And the crowd just tries to quieten him, to try and to keep him still. They don't want more of a spectacle. There's already enough of that with the crowd that's pressing around him. And yet, he's determined. He cries out again, Son of David, have mercy, have pity on me. And it's at that moment that Jesus stops and invites this man to come. He doesn't do it directly. He gets the crowd involved as part of this mood, part of this community. Call him here. So they called the blind man. Have courage. Get up. He's calling you. And the response at this point of Bartimaeus is extraordinary. We're told that he jumps up, throws away the cloak, and just makes a beeline straight towards Jesus. He runs. There's this energy that is there as he makes his way to Jesus. And then Jesus asks him this question. And it seems like a strange question, perhaps, to us. What do you want me to do for you? But in fact, it's exactly the same question that we heard last week. There, after Jesus has predicted his passion for the third time, after he's gone into this extraordinary amount of detail, listing all of the things, the terrible things that were going to unfold for him, James and John get up and they say, Master, we want you to do something for us. And Jesus offers to them exactly the same question. What is it that you want me to do for you? It's a beautiful question, a question that we need to ponder. Jesus does not presume to know. He does not presume to put words into our hearts, into our lives, into our minds. He's not there to dictate how we should respond. He's inviting. He is this extraordinary character all across the Gospels. And so it is the case today. What do you want me to do for you, Rabbi, that I may see? It's a simple request. He's not described as someone who has been born blind, so he has become blind at some point in his life. So he knows what it is to see. He's experienced that gift, and through an accident or through an illness, we don't know, he's experienced this terrible deprivation of not being able to look upon the people that he loves, of not being able to do the work that presumably he loved, and now being alienated and separated and now reduced further and further down the socioeconomic status to now be this utterly useless and person that can't do anything for himself other than beg. And all he can ask is, Rabbi, that I may see. We've already heard about someone who was blind being able to see in this gospel. It was at the beginning of this travel section in chapter 8. And there we're told that it took two goes for Jesus to be able to bring healing. The first instance, the man said, yes, I can kind of see people, but they look like trees. And then Jesus then was very tactile. He put saliva and put this paste onto his eyes, and he was again finally able to see. Here, it's much simpler. It's just a simple command that Jesus speaks into the man's life, and he's healed. He's restored. He's renewed. He's able now to be at one with his community. And what does he do? His sight returned, and he follows Jesus along the way. Last week, we heard about the rich man who wasn't able to respond, who wasn't able to throw off all of his cloaks, all of the things that held him back. He wasn't able to follow Jesus. We've heard of the disciples questioning, being afraid, being confused, and being anxious, and they're not being able to truly follow wholeheartedly. And finally, as we get towards the threshold of Jerusalem, this one man is able to embody all of the responses that we're meant to embody. That eagerness, that desire to throw off everything that might get in the road in order to follow Jesus. The invitation is there for us. As we emerge now from this period of lockdown, as we emerge into this new world, will we be about love of neighbor? Will we be about the common good? Will we throw off those cloaks of things that got in the way, that prevented us from being of service to one another? Will we be people who are marked now as people who trust and give our faith to Jesus, that throw off everything in order to follow along the road? Or will we be like the disciples and continue to have doubts and questions? For us, it's an extraordinary challenge. Jesus will put that question before every single one of us today. What do you want me to do for you? Let's take the chance to respond in whatever way we can to answer that question that Jesus will put to us, and say yes, say whatever it is that we need to in order to faithfully follow Jesus today.